Every year we have possibilities for the following year, all the programs that are options, whether it is YU, Turo, Landers, Macholmev, Bar Ilan, all the programs that are options for the following year, they come to the yeshiva. Each one has its very special niche, for lack of a better word right now. And I'd like to point out something that I say every year about Landers, and I really genuinely believe it to be true. First of all, it's wonderful having Rabbi Bamberger and Rabbi Nathan here. It's always really exciting for me to see you come and join us. But one thing that I really want to hit home is those guys that are entertaining the notion of YU or Queens, Landers. So there are a lot of differences between the places. Sometimes differences between places, just like when you went off to yeshiva trying to pick, which yeshiva am I going to go to? You have to figure out, say, on paper, they all say this. What's the differences between them? But there are. And one of the differences is that Yeshiva University, it's my alma mater, I enjoyed my time there greatly. It's a university, and there happens to be a phenomenal yeshiva there. Landers is a yeshiva that has a phenomenal university there. And that's a major, major difference. For the guys that are actually looking, I want to still be in yeshiva. I want to continue to feel like I'm in yeshiva. Landers happens to be an excellent, excellent option. So I have to publicly apologize to Rabbi Bamberger. I have to take care of something extraordinarily urgent. I enjoy listening to you every year when we're both in the country at the same time. But without further ado, please give your attention to Rabbi Bamberger.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kwalas, sir, for your kind words, and you really spoke everything and anything that I could have said. Really, was said by Rabbi Kwalas just now about Lander. He really summed up really what the niche that we have in the Olam HaTorah is. Well, let me just start and say avart. We'll start with our pleasure before business, if I may. And then I'm going to give over the floor to my esteemed colleague, Rabbi Barry Nathan, who is in charge of recruitment, and he is going to fill in whatever I fail to. And we don't want to stop you from going to lunch. I know it's a very very important to never stand in between somebody and their lunch. I was just listening to a shiur from Rabbi Kwalwasser as I was still, I was learning a little bit in the corner, and it was such a compelling shir. And by the way, Shuster Shiva, thank you very much for being here and for allowing me to be here. He was giving a shir about the makeup of words and how important it is to analyze when the Torah says a word or when we use words in Lashon HaKodesh. Each word has a meaning. It's not like English or other languages, I suppose, as well. I'm not an expert in other languages, but English, we could discuss. In English, when you are writing a report on a computer and you want to look for like a fancier word, so you click on the thesaurus, right, and it just basically gives you a whole lot of synonyms, and you pick one that sounds good, you know, and that's impressive, but it really doesn't matter which one you use. It's all sort of interchangeable. If you use a better word, fancier word, weaker word, it's all fine. In Lashon HaKodesh, it's not that way. In Hebrew, the holy tongue, as it's called, every single word has a shayresh, and every single shayresh speaks to the unique nature of that word. There's no two words that are alike. There are words that seem similar, But they're called Shemas HaNirdafim. Shemas HaNirdafim means they are words that sort of, they're synonyms, but they are words that are chasing one another, but there's a difference between each of them. Every single word in Lashon HaKodesh is unique and tells us an entirely different story than the next. I'd like to ask you what you think of when you think of the word yeshiva. When you think of the word yeshiva sleva taira, the word yeshiva itself, let's focus on that word. What would you say is the root of that word?
To dwell, yeshev, to sit.
To sit, right? Yoshev. Yoshev is to sit. So in the context of a yeshiva, what would you say that the word means? Why was this institution called a yeshiva?
To sit and learn.
To sit and learn. Excellent. That's what I would have said. It's a place that we sit and we learn. What?
To return.
That's interesting. Like a Lashon of Tshuva. It's a place that you could return. It's a place that people come and you find, you go back and you repent and you figure out life and why we're here. That's very, very good. Somebody once asked this to the great Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. What does the word yeshiva mean? And Reb Shlomo Zalman says, I know that you're probably thinking it means like you. I'm sorry, what's your name?
Yechiel.
You're probably thinking like Yechiel, that it means to sit and learn. But I will prove to you that that's impossible. It doesn't mean what Yechiel thinks. And the reason is because there's a Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma says that the word yeshiva, this concept of the institution, this holy institution called yeshiva, how far back in Jewish history do you think it goes? What? Very good. Shem Be'ever. The Gemara says Avraham Avinu had a yeshiva, Yitzchak had a yeshiva, Yaakov had a yeshiva, in the Midbar there is a yeshiva, Moshe Rabbeinu had probably the biggest yeshiva. And so this is a word that goes back, way back in history. It didn't start from Yeshiva Sleva Torah. It didn't start from even Lander. It didn't start from Volozhin, which is the sort of like the template for all of the modern day yeshivas. It goes all the way back to Avraham Avinu. And if that's true, if the word yeshiva has been used all the way back in history, says Rosh Hashanah, then Yechiel is wrong. Because Yechiel said that the word yeshiva means a place that you sit and learn. And the Gemara in Megillah says that from Moshe Rabbeinu until Rabbi Gamliel, it was usher to sit and learn. You were not allowed to just sit like we sit casually by and learn. You know how it looked during the time of Moshe Rabbeinu or all the way to the time of Rabbi Gamliel? People stood and learned. You were not allowed to sit and learn. Va'ata Pai Amidi Madi, the Pasuk says, it was a chutzpah to sit and learn. Sitting and learning is like, that's not the way you should engage in the holiest pursuit in the world. You have to stand. Everybody would have shtenders. We'd stand up and we'd learn. Shir, everybody would be standing. Chavrusas would be standing. And so it can't be that you're right, Yechiel, because if you were right, it wouldn't be called the yeshiva only after Rabbi Gamliel died. The Gemara says, a chulsha was yarad la'ilam. The world got very weak. We weren't able to stand anymore. We had to sit. But it should be called Amida, or at least something else. Yeshiva, Avraham Avinu, it wouldn't be, or Yeshiva Shem Be'ever. Yeshiva Shem Be'ever would not be a place that was called yeshiva, because that means that you were sitting, and you weren't sitting then, you were standing. So, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, you know what the definition of yeshiva is? Yeshiva, and he doesn't say like you're saying, although I like your pshat a lot. He says that yeshiva means it's a place that we engage be yeshuvan shel olam. In yeshuv olam. Does anyone know what that means, yeshuv olam? One guy, come on.
Dwell.
It's a little stronger than just to dwell. Settling the world. It means to allow the world to exist. The very existence of the world, believe it or not, is fueled and is charged by what goes on in this building. A yeshiva is a place that the entire world civilization exists in its merit. Were it not for yeshivas, If there were no yeshivas in the world, if everybody, all yeshivas chalila, would just say, today we're taking a break, it's no Torah Tuesday in the world, there's no Torah being learned today, we're not learning Torah. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, who was the founder of the great yeshiva Volozhin, which, like I said before, was the great yeshiva in history, he says that the world would explode if there was no Torah being learned. The only reason why the world exists is because Torah is being learned. It's Yishuv Shel Olam. It's the ability for the world to continue to spin on its axis only because people like you are sitting and learning Torah. Now, if you're thinking, well, you know, maybe Rebbe Yashiv, maybe the Rosh Yeshiva, maybe big people, when they sit and learn, that's what makes the world go around. Me, I learn a little bit, but I play ball a lot, and I schmooze on the phone, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. I get a chance to learn maybe, you know, a sum total of an hour a day, maybe a few more hours a day. Maybe if I'm really in a good mood, I'll learn 5 hours a day. But am I really the one that's keeping the world going around? Big people in the world, the big rabbis maybe, but not me. So I want to tell you a very, very important yisai that I hope you'll remember whether you go to land or not. I hope you'll remember this vart. This one critical thing from the Shla HaKadosh. Anyone ever heard of the Shla HaKadosh? Very good. Excellent. Rav Horowitz from, you know where he was from? No. He lived in Frankfurt. He was buried. I actually visited his grave a couple of years ago. He was the Rav in Frankfurt, and he was a great mekubal. He has very Kabbalistic svarim, one of the pillars of Torah in the last few hundred years. He says as follows. He says, and it's something that if he wouldn't have said it, I think it might be complete and utter heresy for me to say it. But I'm being Simach on the Shla. He says that in this day and age, and he didn't live in this day and age, he lived going back to the, 1700s, I believe, right? What year did you say? I think 1700s, maybe early 1800s. He said that this, when we sit and learn Torah now, because of all of the nisyonos that we have, because of the fact that we are so plagued by the internet and by all the bombardments of advertising and all of the millions of temptations that lure us on a daily basis because we're living in these times, every single word of Torah that we learn is more valuable than, you know who's Torah? Than the Kadmainim. When I say the Kadmonim, does anyone know who I'm talking about? I'm talking about the Rambam. I'm talking about Rashi. I'm talking about the Rashba. I'm talking about Reb Kiv Eger. I'm talking about Reb Yaakov Emden. I'm talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. Their Torah is not as valuable as ours is, because they were living in times that were relatively easy to learn. There wasn't that much resistance to learning. Today, it's almost impossible for us to learn. Because who's able in this day and age to break away from the temptations of Olam Hazeh in order to open up a sefer and learn? Do you know what it takes to do that? You obviously do because you made the commitment to learn in the yeshiva. But it's not a layup. We know it's not easy. I have a cell phone, obviously, as probably most people in the country do. I used to have, I'll admit, I'll confess, many yeshivas, so I could do tshuva now, right? I used to have a smartphone. It's called a BlackBerry. And I had it because I needed emails, and but once you have it already, you start looking at stuff online, and you start using it for, you know, the yeshivaworld.com and buses.nias.com, all the important news sites and websites that, you know, become addictive, and others as well. And I wasn't proud of it. I wasn't happy with it, but that's the way it is. My wife got it for me. You know how much it cost me, this BlackBerry? Guess how much it cost?
Zero.
One penny. One penny, I'll show you the credit card bills, 0.01 cents. That's how much, because the Yetzirah is very smart. The Yetzirah knows if it would have cost $150, Bamberger is not buying no smartphone. So he charged the penny, and all types of great deals, a family plan and whatever, and they hooked me, I got into it. I was walking from a PTA meeting, or actually to a PTA meeting of my son in his yeshiva, and I was just about to make a phone call, and the BlackBerry started like bobbling. It was like, it just started bobbling in my hand. It fell on the floor, and the screen shattered. It looked like a spider web on the screen. You could still use it, you could still see it, but the whole thing was like, it was shattered. And I had like a feeling, most of us, I think, would get very upset if that happened. And my son, in fact, said when he saw it, he says, "Tao, were you like, did you get crazy when, you know, when it broke?" I said, "No." I said, "I was so happy. It was like a moment of redemption for me. I finally had an opportunity to break away a little bit from the Yetzer Hara." And I went to the AT&T store, and I think that I'm the first person in human history, or at least in the history of AT&T, to go and do this. I went into the store, and I said, "My screen shattered of the BlackBerry." They said, "No problem, we'll replace it for you. You know, a few dollars, not a big deal." I said, "I don't want you to replace it for me." "Oh, you want a brand new BlackBerry?" "No." "You want an Apple iPhone?" "No." "You want a 4S? We have a great deal of a brand new Apple. Everybody's going crazy about it. We could give it for you very cheap." "I don't want it." "So what do you want?" I said, "I want a downgrade." "A downgrade? Nobody does it. You sure?" I said, "Yeah, what do you want to downgrade to?" I said, "Do you have like a flip phone from like 1997? Like a really huge phone, like the cordless, you know, the size of a cordless phone from your house, you know, like a big phone that, you know, it weighs like a few pounds?" "So, well, we don't make those anymore." I said, "Well, can you find me one maybe like in the back storage room?" "No, but we will give you one that really does nothing. It's just like a flip phone. Nobody wants it. Do you want it?" I said, "Yeah." "So you know it'll cost you. Like, you know, it's almost as much as the black because it's like a discontinued map." "That's fine." They mamish were about to call the people with the white coats to take me away. They thought that I was completely insane. Who is this person in 2012 that's trading in their cool BlackBerry for a flip phone that doesn't really do anything? It barely texts. You know, on the BlackBerry you have the whole keypad. It's very easy to text. This is like, you know, you got to do like, you know, to get a B, you got to punch that button twice, and then you got to, and I'm so lazy, like I can't, my wife is like texting me, and I have no cheshek to text her back, because it's like just impossible. So I don't text her back, she gets mad at me, it works out very well, but that's what I did. And I'm proud of it, because it's so hard in this day and age, as it is with all the distractions. I need a smartphone in my pocket, but because most of us have these addictions to technology, and it was difficult, by the way. There was a withdrawal process, you know, as I was breaking free from it. It was not easy. I'm not saying I'm like a superhero, but eventually you get used to it, and eventually it's fine. You don't have to check your, you know, your internet and all the news sites and all this every single second. You could do it just one at home or, you know, in your office, and that's it. You don't need this garbage. But if you have it, or you grew up with it, and you know what it is, and you can't, how is it so easy for you to sit down and learn? How can you do that? And the Shlach HaKadosh, who lived hundreds of years ago, and apparently there were distractions back then also, said that because it's so difficult, that's why we get so much schar, we get so much reward for doing it. So I've come here from New York to tell you and Yeshivas Levi Torah one thing. And that is, don't believe for a second that when you sit and learn a Pasuk Chumash, a little Rashi, a line or two of Gemara, that it's insignificant. You don't have any idea how significant it is, how much you're contributing to Yeshuva and Shalalim, how you are the ones that are making the world go round, and the Rambam is jealous of you. Because with his hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of blot that he used to learn every year, that doesn't compare to three words that we learn, perhaps, because he didn't have the distractions that we do. And so you should just know how chashuv it is, every word that we learn. It's gold. It's worth billions of dollars. And I know you think that I'm crazy, but that's what our rabbis tell us. I'm just here to say what, and it's not my own chidushim. It's just something that you should know. And every time you're tempted to do something else and you actually make the decision, instead of doing X, Y, or Z, I'm going to sit and learn, you don't know how much schar, how much nachas you're giving the Rabbeinu Shlomo. That's all I'm here to say. I want to just say one thing about Lander College for Men, just to elaborate on what Rabbi Qualwasser said. And then, as I said, I'm going to give over the floor to Rabbi Nathan. I know that Leiv HaTorah is a great place because we have great Talmidim that come from this yeshiva. Shmuley Zimel, who, by the way, I don't see. Where is he? What? There you go again. Please. So he's one of them, but we have others. But he's like, I guess, you know, he's our golden boy here. He's like, he's our All-American. But so many others like him, from this yeshiva, from other yeshivas, we have 220 guys that are really sitting day and night within the confines of our beautiful 7-acre campus and with all the gashmias, but they're sitting and doing something unbelievable. They're sitting and learning Torah like you are. But they're not sitting learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael where it's sort of relatively easy, and I don't mean that in a flippant way. I know it's difficult here also, but in America, it's more difficult than here. Here you're living in the Holy Land, and there's Avir of Eretz Yisrael, the air of Eretz Yisrael, which makes you smart, and you have more of a temptation to learn and to get ruchnias. In America, the temptation is quite the opposite. And you're going to go back to America someday, maybe, and you're going to have to face the reality that I need college, and where am I going to do college? Am I going to be able to continue with all of the ruchniyistic aliyah that I've made here or not? Or am I going to just throw it all away as I get into Kennedy Airport or wherever you're landing? Am I going to just forfeit all of the great strides that I made in ruchniyus just because now I have to go back to America and go to college? So I'm telling you that if you could handle Lander College for Men, and it's a difficult dual curriculum, it's not easy. You have to learn until 3 o'clock, and there are many shiurim, there are wonderful shiurim. You have to go to college from 3 to 6, 3 to 7, not constantly, not course after course, but like that's the time that's allotted to college. There's a night seder, 8 to 10. The guys there are so happy because they have found a place that they can continue learning, they could feel good about themselves, they could feel a holiness, and they can get a great college education at the same time. Because of that, we have an amazing institution. It's not easy, but it's something that if you come and you really try hard, you could succeed. And so it's a wonderful thing that you have that option available to you, whether it's for you or not. You know, you have to speak to your Abayim and you have to think about it yourself. But it's something that I want to invite each and every one of you to consider, because I know that once you're in Leiv HaTorah, you don't want to just throw it all away. You want to continue with all of the greatness that you've gained over here and continue to build on that. And not just say, okay, I had my year or two in Israel, now I'm going to go and, you know, just start all over again, pretend it didn't happen, and just go on with life as it was before Eretz Yisrael. You have to build on your successes in life. And Lander College is a premier place that you could do that. We'd love to invite you to consider it. And Rabbi Nathan, please.
Before I get started, I want to take what the Mashiach said seriously.
There you go. I don't want to be interrupted when I'm talking.
I've been here before, and please let the Rav know I want to thank him for having us here. I'm just going to take 3 to 4 minutes. I know you're going to go to lunch, and I'm going to be here afterwards during lunch. You want to come bring up some food? I'll be sitting at that back table over there. You want to come shores with me? You want to bring me something to eat? That would also be nice. I'll tell you a little bit about Lander. I can tell this is a very unique place because I just happened to glance at a couple of the svarim on one of the tables, and I saw Sacred Monsters and Finding Your Bashert. So it seems like you guys have some really interesting shiurim here, so I can't wait to come. Anyway, I'm married, because the monstrous part scares me a little bit more. Has askamas from a lot of rabbanim. I just don't have to get that. Remember, we really painted a picture for you of what our institution represents. As the admissions person, and I still view myself as sort of as an outsider looking in, having spent almost a quarter century in teaching in high school, I was a director of NCSY, so I think I've covered a lot of the gamut of Jewish education within this world, modern Orthodox world, and I can tell you it's a very unique institution. I'm going to make 5 points, and I think we'll really point to exactly what we're about. Number one, we're small. If you're looking for an institution that has small classes, relatively small shiurim, 6 to 7 different options in shiur, where you have access, continuous access, and to rabbeim, kollel, faculty, deans, heads of departments, literally on a daily basis, this I do not believe you will find anyplace else. Because our dean, Moshe Sokol, you know, is a doctorate from UFP, also is a rabbi of a synagogue in Flatbush, and he is Flatbush, New York. He's accessible. He's, I think, the only dean in the world. If you miss your appointment with him, you grab him at Mincha. It's a very unique thing that we have, Mincha. Accessibility. When you're going through a college program, you're going through a long day, accessibility to people who can help you grow, be there for you, okay, push you, really get to know you in terms of, even if you haven't chosen your major, which is perfectly normal at this point. Okay, we work with you, we give you a chance to find out what you might want to be, and then we basically, as they say, cradle to chuppah, everything from helping you find your courses, helping you through undergraduate, helping you get ready for graduate school, everything from writing your resume, job placement service, which we have, boys getting into fantastic graduate schools, our MCAT scores, our LSAT scores are literally high, our CPA scores are the second highest in the country for 3 years running, thank God. And we can do that because we have state-of-the-art faculty, small school, a lot of attention, and small classes. That's Aleph. On the Beit Medrash time, Rabbi Bamberger mentioned, Shiurim, Rebbeim, people there that can really sit and talk with you and help you evolve into who you want to be, who you want to continue to be. As our Menahel has said numerous times, if you're not growing as a Ben Torah in our institution, you're missing the boat. And that's something really to think about. Number two, the cost of our school, as a private university goes, is very reasonable. Again, you know, I'm a parent. I see a parent sitting here in the room. I'm sure they'll gulp twice when I say the number anyway, but, you know, I have to say it. Tuition, room and board, all together, before a penny of any kind of scholarship, is $25,600. That's before academic scholarships, need-based scholarships, learning scholarships, that's before anything. Okay, that's also unique in itself. Are the physical structure of Lander. It's 7 acres of beautiful state-of-the-art campus, glass and cheese, sports facilities, state-of-the-art workout center with all kinds of pumping iron. As you can see, I do it extensively. Pumping iron machines. Please don't laugh that much. It's in a beautiful area. It's brand new. The machinery is exactly a year and a half old, even if that much. And you're encouraged to go to it. The Rebbeim and actually a number of the deans actually work at it also. We take it very, very seriously. The dorms are Tanas apartments with full kitchens, living rooms. You get 4 to 5 guys in an apartment with 2 beautiful bathrooms. I mean, it's in a beautiful, from neighborhood like Hugh Garden Hills, Queens, all kinds of, it's like Israel. You have Hasidim, and you have Sephardim, and Ashkenazim, and Arabs, and Israel. You have everything in Queens you need. We have it later. It's great. It's fantastic. Just go out of this. Just go to Main Street for a block, and you'll a burqa here, a burqa there. Just kidding. Anyway, it's really, and it's a safe community with a lot of Bati Midrashios and Bati Knessiot all over the place. You're in the middle of a thriving, diverse community. Guys get invited out for meals. It's very unique. And that is in itself something very unique to the environment. In Shabbat, we have an in Shabbat every 5-6 weeks. Every other Shabbatot, you have an option of staying in. Rabbi Bamberger, Rabbi Soloveitchik are there every Shabbat to learn with you and to give shiurim and to speak. So that even if you're a boy that doesn't live in the New York area, you sign up for Shabbat meals, you know, it's fantastic. Again, you can be part of it. Invariably, I know a third to a half of the yeshiva stay in, and it makes a big difference. It's a place for boys who have an interest in Lima Torah and academic excellence. Excellence in both aspects of your life to mold you, and I'll leave you with the following thought. Oftentimes, we make a misimpression that we come to Israel and we've separated ourselves from secular life, and it takes so hard and so long to get back into secular life. I can tell you it's not true. I've canvassed our Rebbeim and our faculty even more so. And our faculty were all PhDs that have taught in Harvard and Barnard and Swarthmore and NYU and YU have told me a boy that comes from yeshiva is a better student, asks better questions. A Shanabet student asks even better questions, and they prefer those boys. At least from the non-Jewish teachers. To quote one of them, I like those bet boys. That was kind of cute. The bottom line is that what you're doing here is enhancing you to be a better college student, as well as a mentor. That is the truth. I did a study, and that's really what I see. So when you're going back, go back with an excitement. Don't let people tell you, rush back. You don't know how to do mathematics. You know how to drive. You know how to swim. You'll figure it out. It's great. And you'll come back with a high. I'll close with the following idea. If you're looking for a small place that's state-of-the-art, both in your learning and in your academics, we have access to faculty and Rebbeim like no other place that I know of in a dual curriculum situation. Learning culture should be a strong consideration. We are very sensitive to the needs of our students, including being there in terms of finances, sensitive to the needs of the students while they're there in terms of academics and learning. And I think it might be a place that you might continue to have to grow even more, so that when you go on to graduate school and then marriage and being a parent, when your kid comes home and he takes out his Mishnayot or his Chumash, you're able to learn with him. And you have the Yidiot to build that home. When you come home from your 9-to-5, whether it be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever it is, okay, that combination is priceless. And I think that's what we have to strive to do. If we have to go back to Chutz La'aretz, and I really hope you'll have the opportunity to join me in the back later during and after lunch, but also, God willing, coming up in the months and years ahead. Thank you.